This is Childhood Matters, presented by Interactive Parenting Media.
Childhood Matters.
For parents and everyone else who cares for or about kids.
We are family. Get up, everybody, and sing.
Here's your host, Rona Renner.
Good morning and welcome to Childhood Matters. April is National Autism Awareness Month, and today we'll discuss the continuing perplexities as to the causes of autism spectrum disorder, and we'll take a look at some of the treatments and therapies that are offered to children of all ages. KidsData.org reported some newly released data from the California Department of Education showing that the growth in special education students diagnosed with autism continues to rise from roughly 17,500 California public school students in 2002 to nearly 60,000 in 2010. That's from 17,500 in 2002 to nearly 60,000 in 2010. There's so much we don't understand, like why boys are four times as likely as girls to be on the autistic spectrum, or why the prevalence of autism in one city is so different than another. What we do know is that it continues to be on the rise, and much more research is needed to unlock the mysteries of this complex disorder. I'm Nurse Rona. I'm here each week to present important information to parents, grandparents, foster parents, childcare providers, big sisters, big brothers, or anyone who cares for and about children. Today, we'll hear from professionals who have dedicated a good part of their careers to the diagnosis and treatment of autism, and we hope to hear from parents who want to share with us their wisdom about what has helped their children. There's a wide range of abilities and disabilities that children on the autistic spectrum experience, and so treatment is complex, and to be effective, it has to be tailored to the needs of each child. We'd love to hear from you this morning. If you want to be part of the conversation, call us at 877-372-KIDS. That's 877-372-5437. You can also email us at info@childhoodmatters.org. Joining us in the studio is Dr. Deborah Monroe. She's a clinical psychologist specializing in the evaluation, diagnosis, and treatment of developmental disorders in childhood. Also, attachment difficulties in high-risk parent-child relationships, and early detection and diagnosis of autism spectrum disorders. She has a wide range of experience providing psychotherapy treatment and neuropsychological assessments for children and families throughout the Bay Area. For the last 6 years, she's worked at the Regional Center of the East Bay in various capacities and currently is the psychologist for autism spectrum disorders, evaluating infants and toddlers, providing recommendations for treatment, and also developing and recruiting community resources for early intervention programs. She also maintains a private practice. Dr. Deborah Monroe, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure, and I'm sure you keep pretty busy these days.
Yes, we do.
You do. Also in studio with us is Dr. Irva Hertz-Pichotto. She's a professor of public health sciences in the School of Medicine, and she's the deputy director of the Children's Center for Environmental Health at UC Davis. Her focus at the MIND Institute is autism and other neurodevelopmental disorders. Her interests reach many things, including environmental exposures involving metals, pesticides, PCBs, and air pollution, and also early childhood development. She has served on scientific advisory boards for the state of California, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the National Toxicology Program of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, and the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, just to mention some. And she has taught courses on four continents. Dr. Irva Hertz-Pichotto, welcome to Childhood Matters.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I'm going to start off with you this morning. I'd like you to address the question of why autism rates continue to rise and something about what we know and what we don't know, and all of this in a few minutes.
Okay. We don't fully understand why the rates of autism have been increasing, and you just laid out the figures. They're really quite startling. We do know that part of that rise has to do with the way we define and the way we diagnose autism, so that since 1990, there have been changes in the actual criteria used for you know, defining or diagnosing a child as having autism. There's some evidence that we may have misdiagnosed children in the past, mm-hmm. and that now we're getting it right more of the time. But by and large, these sorts of diagnostic and ascertainment types of aspects of the picture don't explain all of the rise. And we do believe that there are environmental factors that explain this, some of the fairly rapid and consistent increase over the last 20 years.
And just very briefly, when you say environmental factors, just give me an idea of, you know, what that might be.
Really, everything that's not part of our inherited DNA. So people think immediately of, well, chemicals in the environment, and that is part of it. But also what we eat, the medications that we take, the microbial environment, the infections that are out there, the viruses, and then maybe aspects of the maternal environment in for when the fetus is growing in utero, we're seeing, you know, lots of metabolic changes recently with the growth of obesity. So some of these kinds of factors could be related to autism.
And what I'm so encouraged about is that people like you and the Mind Institute, UC Davis, are continuing to do the research. I know probably there isn't enough money for the research that's needed, but it does give me some hope that maybe someday we'll know more.
Well, there's more research going on now than there has been in the past. And there really was a sort of sad history where for decades nobody was looking at environmental factors because the prevailing paradigm in the scientific community was that it was due to bad parenting practices. And we had this expression, refrigerator moms, which—
That's right. And I was taught that when I was a nursing student 45 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's horrible.
It's a very sad history, and yeah. I think we are moving beyond that now.
Thank you very much. Dr. Deborah Munro, tell us a little bit about your work with the Regional Center, and maybe you can say something about those red flags that people can look for so that early intervention can be the normal course of treatment.
Okay. Well, the first year and a half that I was at Regional Center, I was a high-risk infant specialist, so I was actually doing eligibility evaluations for children under the age of 3. And then after the first year and a half, I became the autism specialist. So I'm a clinical psychologist in the state of California, and now I'm practicing at the Regional Center as the autism specialist.
And not everyone knows what the Regional Center is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the Regional Center of the East Bay is actually one of 21 regional centers in the state of California that provide services to people with developmental disabilities, one of which is autistic disorder or autism spectrum disorders.
Yeah, so that work is, I mean, when a parent is concerned about a child, that's really, after seeing the pediatrician, that's often the first place for a young child where they'll go and get an evaluation and get help, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And we see children as early as possible there. We've seen children in our clinic as early as 9 months for autism evaluation, and we're fortunate in that we're able to put in services right away when we suspect any type of developmental delay. But especially for autism spectrum disorders, we put in services that address those core deficits of autism as soon as possible.
Good. And what are some of those red flags for anyone listening who doesn't know what a parent or a grandparent or child care provider should be looking for?
What we like to do when we're talking about red flags is talk about them in three main areas, because those are actually the areas we look at when we diagnose. So we look at social, communication, and behaviors and interests. So some of the red flags for communication are a child isn't responding to his name when it's called. And another in the communication area is that there is just a general language delay. Mm-hmm. So that could be both expressively and receptively, so a child might not seem to be understanding what's said to him or her. Oftentimes, parents come in and say they thought their child might perhaps be deaf, that they weren't responding, and that is very indicative of an autism spectrum disorder when a child doesn't respond to environmental sounds and their name being called.
And again, these are the kinds of things that need to be checked out, and most people start with the pediatrician. But I think it's also really important for when parents are really concerned that people listen.
Yes, absolutely. Another one in the communication area is that the child isn't doing any gesturing. And gestures are really one of the things we look for. Are they pointing? Are they waving bye-bye? Some of those simple gestures aren't being used like we would expect them to be. And in the social area, we look at things like smiling, a social smile. Does a child smile back when you smile at, at him or her? Sometimes kids that are on the autism spectrum like to, they seem to prefer to play alone or to be alone rather than interacting.
Yeah. So that's a good place to start. And again, it's not quite as simple as that, but I think those are really wonderful guides for people to be thinking of. And I'd love to hear from parents this morning, 1-877-372-KIDS, either about how you got help, how you knew, or any questions you have from our experts here this morning about what's on your mind raising a child with autism. And I think we'll start off with our Liveline. We have Sonia with us from Clayton. Good morning, Sonia.
Good morning, Dr. Rona. How are you?
Oh, Nurse Rona, come on. Sonia's one of our regular listeners. It's such a pleasure to hear from you always. Sonia, do you have an actual question this morning, or do you want to just add to the conversation? I know you have two twin boys who are how old now?
My twin boys are 6 years old, and they're in first grade.
And you have two older children also, right?
And I have two older children, a high schooler, a middle schooler, and identical twins that are in first grade. Two different schools, so I have four different schools going.
Wow. And and it's your twins who are on the autistic spectrum?
My twin boys are on the spectrum. They have higher functioning autism, but they do need to be in a special education setting because they weren't diagnosed until about 4.5 years old.
Uh-huh.
So interesting, you would think that, you know, I'm educated. I actually went to UC Davis. But the signs, even, you know, as an educated parent, you really need to be aware of these signs. And that's, I think, the most important thing that I'm listening to on the show this morning.
How did you figure it out?
Actually, through your show, you had a few years back, you had some shows on autism, which at the time didn't connect at all. But being twins, I took a lot of it as twin behavior.
Uh-huh.
And it was very frustrating. I thought a lot of what I was doing wasn't correct. And then what happened was they were in a preschool, and the teacher advised to get a hearing test.
Interesting.
And that's kind of what opened the door. They were, you know, just they appeared like they had a hearing problem. They weren't responding. By age 3.5, they still didn't have language. They were lining things up, but they were, you know, things, when you look at programs sometimes on TV, you know, it's a spectrum, so you see what you see and you think, oh, they're going to do certain things, but they're kind of subtle sometimes. They're not always obvious.
That's really important, and I'd like our guests to address that. It's like there is still this stereotypic idea of what a child with autism looks like.
Yes.
And I would imagine Sonia's story is not unusual in that way, is it, Deborah?
It's not unusual at all. And actually, she's absolutely correct that the signs are very subtle, especially in young children, because they're still growing and developing. It's sometimes hard to catch them, and even professionals miss those very early subtle signs.
And Irva, also for you, you were saying about the numbers of autism. This is why it's sometimes so unclear in terms of those more subtle signs.
Well, when we look at the statistics, we actually do see that, that diagnoses sometimes change in children over time, that they may have come into the regional center with, you know, a diagnosis, say, of developmental delay, and then it might be months later or, you know, a year or more before the diagnosis of autism or autism spectrum disorder actually gets assigned. So this there's a term called diagnostic substitution, and you know, the statistics seem to show that maybe, you know, a quarter of the rise might have been due to that sort of phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sonia, is there any question you have for our guests or anything else you want to add before we move on?
I wanted to thank you for being on the show and a regional center, because it was really regional center that diagnosed one of my twins, and they do an excellent job. And I just want to say that it was definitely worth the waiting. You need to apply and then just be really patient. But they're excellent, and through Regional Center, I'm getting the ABA therapy for my twins, and it's made a huge improvement.
And what does that stand for, Deborah?
Applied Behavioral Analysis.
And what you're seeing, I'm sure, as the mom who's a real advocate for your kids, is that you feel in current time you're getting the kind of services you need. Is that right, Sonia?
That's exactly right. And then the other thing is that I want to encourage parents just to not only be patient, but to educate themselves. It's so important as a parent because we play a huge role in our children's behavior, and I didn't realize how big that role was until I myself took that ABA parent education session.
And how do you keep up your ability to be patient? And, you know, besides having four kids, we know that when children's behaviors are such, especially when other people, you go to the store and other people don't realize that they're, you know, have a disability, there's a lot of judgment, there's a lot of criticism. How do you keep your spirit up?
It's been a journey, and it takes every day, and you really, you know how they say, you know, don't worry about what other people think. You really have to be there every day. You really have to think, what is the most important thing for me, my children? And I know it's easier said than done, but I've gone through this like I said, journey, and every day I just have to think, I'm grateful for my children. They're special. They're very special. And, you know, I'll go to Costco, and they'll decide they're going to scream in the middle of the store, and I don't need to explain to anybody. You know, I think more and more people are becoming aware, and it doesn't bother me as much. I just do what I need to do as a parent, and they're the priority.
Yes.
And if you just think positive and do positive and stay positive, eventually it'll kick in.
Well, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for your help with other parents as well. And, you know, we have a very special gift this morning. The company Fun and Function has sent us a gift called Guess How I Feel. It's a game to play with children from age 3 to adult. It's 2 to 4 players. It's specifically for kids as your children are on the autistic spectrum disorder, and any child who's having some social cue issues or having trouble understanding their feelings. And it looks like a wonderful game. I want to try it myself. So we're going to send this to you for being such a great listener, and also your wisdom around your kids. Sonia, thank you so much.
Thank you for having this topic today.
Bye-bye. Have a great day.
Okay.
Dr. Irva Hertz-Pichotto, we have a minute before the break. Going back to the research that you're doing, is there anything that that parents should how do parents know what to do to prevent this? At this point, we can't really say, can we?
Well, that's actually a long question, but briefly I could say that we don't know a lot. There are a few studies suggesting that pesticides could play a role. There is a study we published recently on air pollution, actually living close to freeways, suggesting that air pollution might play a role, and maybe diet.
Well, there's much more to say about that. We're going to take a break and come right back. We want to take your questions. In a moment, we'll talk with you.
up the phone and get involved.
Call now at 1-877-372-KIDS.
You're listening to Childhood Matters.
More with Rona Renner after this.
Here's this week's Childhood Matters community calendar with events for parents and kids. Have your little one join the free play groups at the Child Care Center in Soledad this Thursday, April 28, 4:30 to 6:30. For more information, call 831-678-3671. That's 831-678-3671. Learn how acupuncture can support your fertility health at Birthways in Berkeley, Tuesday, April 26, 6:30 to 8. For more information, call 510-869-2797. That's 510-869-2797. Check out the Bobcat feedings every Tuesday through Sunday at Curiosity in San Mateo. For more information, call 650-342-7755. That's 650-342-7755. Take your kids out to dance at free family dance classes held this Saturday at the West Oakland Library 9 to 10 and the Eastmont Library 1 to 2. For more information, call 510-428-1155. That's 510-428-1155. Free drop-in internet access is ongoing at Opportunity Junction in Antioch, Monday through Thursday, 6 to 9. Job hunting resources, English typing software available, and more. For more information, call 925-776-1133. That's 925-776-1133. Looking for a support network while raising a child? Drop in at Kinship Care at our second home in Daly City, Wednesday, April 27, 6:30 to 8:30. For more information, call 650-301-3303. That's 650-301-3303. Enjoy bilingual story time at the San Bruno Library this Tuesday, April 19, 11:15 to 11:45. For more information on this reoccurring event, call 650-616-7078. That's 650-616-7078. For additional information on events, call 510-663-5437. And to submit information, email info@childhoodmatters.org. I'm Lorenzo Plazola.
Childhood obesity is at an all-time high, and the earlier you take action to help your child have a healthy weight, the better. But good nutrition for young children isn't always easy. Here are some tips to encourage healthy eating. Make fruits and vegetables a priority. It's recommended that young children eat 5 or more servings of fruits and vegetables every day. Include at least 1 fruit or vegetable with every meal and snack. Also, offer your child a variety of healthy food choices. Children may need to try a new food 10 times or more before they like it. If your child doesn't want to eat something, try again another time. Don't force your child to eat anything. And limit high sugar and high fat foods, including junk foods, fast foods, flavored drinks, and soft drinks. Use food for nourishment and not as a treat or a reward. For more nutrition tips, contact your local Bay Area First 5 County Commission by visiting first5kids.org/bay.
Brought to you in part by your local First 5.
My darling, be home soon. It's not just these few hours, but I've been waiting since I traveled for the great relief of having you to talk to.
We continue with Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First 5.
Join in the conversation at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Here's more with Nurse Rona on Childhood Matters.
Today we're talking about autism, and joining us is Dr. Deborah Monroe, a clinical psychologist currently working at the Regional Center of the East Bay and in private practice, and Dr. Irva Hertz-Pachoto, a professor of public health sciences in the School of Medicine and deputy director of the Children's Center for Environmental Health at UC Davis. And we're talking with you. Call us with your questions. Maybe you know someone who has a child with autism. Maybe you're raising a child who does. Any questions around behavior, treatment, or cause, we'd love to hear from you. Let's take a call now from Kim in Pleasanton. Good morning, Kim.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you for joining us.
Good. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing this. This is awesome.
You're welcome. So do you have a question or something you want to add?
Well, at this time I want to tell a little bit of my story. I have a son that was diagnosed on the autism spectrum around October of 2009. He was around 2.5 years old, and at the time, he had a lot of classic symptoms, you know, such as speech delay, delayed social interaction. He had hypersensitivity to sound and touch, uh-huh. And then some other unusual behaviors, but we got him diagnosed, and around the time, I read about the elimination diet, where uh-huh. you remove things such as gluten. gluten and dairy, pesticides, food dyes, preservatives, etc. And I had already been on a diet myself for other reasons, for health reasons, and had lost like 40 pounds on it and doing great. And so I decided, I knew it was a healthy diet for my son, so I decided to go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
And the results were amazing. I mean, literally within weeks, you know, he went from speaking 20 words one at a time to putting, just as his vocabulary exploded, he started putting two words together.
And is this the casein-free, gluten-free diet?
You know, I did, I removed gluten, which is, you know, the wheat, and I also removed the casein, which is dairy. But I also did, you know, like pesticides, so I went all organic.
Uh-huh.
I removed food dyes, colorings, preservatives, nitrates. I really cleaned up his diet, you know, filtered his water that he drank. And
you saw a very, very dramatic change.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And then as the months followed, of course, he also started, through the regional center, he started speech and occupational therapy. And as the months went by, you know, all his autism traits slowly began to dissolve. So now he is 4.5, and to the typical eye is, you know, a typical child.
Does he still have some sensory or communication issues that you can see?
Now, I think his vocabulary is right on. He's up to, his speech is right up to speed. Now, with sensitivity, I notice, like, he doesn't like parades and such, but he's doing a lot better than 2 years ago.
Well, let me ask my guests about this. I think it's really important to hear the anecdotal, you know, stories from parents who have found ways to make a difference. Let me start with you, Dr. Irva Hertz-Pachoto.
Yeah, this is it's always interesting to hear these anecdotes. In our research, we have found that the children with autism seem to have immune markers that are different compared to their typically developing counterparts. And it's something we don't fully understand, but it's something that I work with immunologists who are examining blood that we take from children with autism, and we just see their cells responding very differently when challenged in the test tube. You know, not in life, we're not experimenting on the children, but so it's very interesting to hear your story in terms of removing, you know, both these aspects of the diet and these other environmental factors. You know, one can never know what's really changing, you know, whether how much of it was the therapy, how much of it was what you changed in terms of the house. But it sounds like a very interesting phenomenon, and I'm really glad you called in to let us know about that.
And I would imagine with the research you're doing around pesticides and other things, we don't have anything definitive yet, it sounds like, but I would imagine a parent, you know, such as Kim, wanting to change things makes sense, because I think the whole idea of not doing any harm.
Right. And I do think that there are, you know, it might be different factors that can help in the long run versus what was the cause in the first place. We do believe that the causes of autism really start very early in utero, and, you know, in some cases there are, you know, genes that families may carry, and so some families have this tendency and will have more than one child with autism, for example. So there is something about susceptibility that is inherited. And then we believe that there are other factors that happen during the course of the gestation, even starting very early in gestation. One of the reasons why we think that is because some of the very earliest studies ever done on environmental factors came out of the 1970s, when there was an epidemic of rubella, which is also known as German measles. And children who had been exposed during their gestation, in other words, they had congenital rubella, were far more likely to show autistic symptoms, just like astronomically more likely, like 50 or 100 times more likely. And, you know, It turns out there seem to be other infections that may have that kind of a causal relationship. None of those factors are probably playing a role today because we have conquered them through vaccination programs. But it does suggest, because it was not just specifically one virus or another, that it might be the inflammatory environment created by the response to those infectious agents.
Pretty complicated stuff, but really important to be looking at these different factors. I just want to ask you, Deborah, Kim is talking about that combination of treatment, that the treatment from the regional center, the behavioral treatments, and then what mom can do. I would imagine you hear this a lot in the families you work with.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I've heard many parents who have put their children on the gluten and casein-free diets, notice quite a change. And we're so fortunate at the Regional Center of the East Bay. We have numerous companies that provide applied behavioral analysis, and we're able to get children in very quickly as soon as there's a concern about autism. And sometimes we're able to actually start the services, autism-specific services, even before the child is diagnosed.
Because there are some symptoms, but the diagnosis hasn't been made yet.
Exactly.
You know, Kim, it sounds to me like you probably know other parents who have done similarly to what you have in terms of really working on, as you say, cleaning up the diet and things like that. Have you heard other stories like this?
Yes, actually, I have just started a gluten and dairy-free support group here in the East Bay area, and I would say over half of my group are parents with children on the autism spectrum, and yes, everyone that you speak to has a success story. Their child has improved to some degree, and usually similar to my story, where they just can't believe the vocabulary, how it explodes, and all of a sudden their children are saying things that they didn't even know their child knew.
Well, I really appreciate what you're saying. Go ahead, Irva.
Yeah, I just wondered, did your child have GI symptoms that many parents report in association with autism spectrum?
Gastrointestinal symptoms?
Yes. Yeah, my son had severe constipation. I would say he was around 2 months old. He didn't go for about 20 days and was exclusively breastfed at that point, which is highly abnormal for a breastfed child.
Right.
And I jokingly tell people, when I put him on this diet, he started pooping every day, and the more he pooped, the more he talked.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating. Well, I just appreciate so much. Is there a way, if people wanted to contact you, is there a way to do that?
Sure, yeah.
I mean, do you have a website or anything like that? You said you started a support group. I was just curious.
Yeah, absolutely. People can actually currently go to meetup.com/GFCF-living. That's where they can sign up for my support group.
Okay, and if people want to, they could contact us, and we'll let them know. That's
absolutely
a long name. Kim, thank you so much for calling in this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing.
Oh, and I'll give you a book, too. I have a book called Engaging Autism by Stanley Greenspan. He's a terrific doctor who's done some wonderful work around behavioral things. So we'll send this to you, okay?
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First Five.
Pick up the phone and get involved. Call Childhood Matters now at 1-877-372-KIDS. That's 1-877-372-KIDS.
Okay, we'll take more calls. We'd love to hear from you, finding out about your questions and also your experiences raising a child with autism. We have Amy now from Sunnyvale on the line. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. My son is autistic. He's 10 years old right now, and I also have a daughter who's 7, and she's typically developing. And I just wanted to touch again on the complexity of the diagnosis and on how persistent you have to be as a parent to get that and to understand that. We were concerned about our son's development when he was 1, and he wasn't actually diagnosed with autism until he was 4. And we went through several pediatricians before we were able to get that the right referrals. And our first pediatrician told us that we were just overly concerned first-time parents. You know, we were being hypersensitive
yes.
to his
sorry.
His needs as a child, and that the crying and his behavior was not out of the norm. And we had to really trust our instincts on that and keep looking for answers. And initially, when we did go to the regional center, he was diagnosed with a speech delay, as I think Dr. Monroe was talking about earlier, before he was diagnosed with autism. So he did start getting services for that speech delay.
Which is a great way to start being able to observe the child, too, once you get those services, right, Dr. Monroe?
Yes.
It's like you have now this child in front of you.
Right. Yes, we get a lot of feedback from speech therapists, actually, and they will often be the ones to bring up the concern.
Go ahead, Amy.
Mm-hmm. And the thing that was confusing for us as parents in getting an autism diagnosis, we were really resistant to that at first. We thought, okay, speech delay, I can get my mind around that, because he obviously wasn't... he wasn't speaking, and that was part of our concern to begin with. But we had some ideas in our heads about these stereotypical autistic behaviors and about the severity of autism. We didn't
That's
understand
right.
the full spectrum of
That's
autistic
right.
behavior. And so we didn't see him doing things that we thought of as autistic, like headbanging or self-injuring or being off in his own little world. He didn't regress, which you see a lot of media stories about children who develop typically until they're about a year and a half old, and then they lose those skills. He just wasn't
right.
Developing the language in the first place.
That's a really good point that you're making, because I think that's what we're stressing here today. And is that pretty typical, Deborah, in terms of what Amy's saying?
Yes, absolutely. This is so common that parents have noticed these kinds of behaviors and red flags, and oftentimes they're told, don't worry about it, he'll grow out of it, it's just a developmental phase. And you're right, Amy, you have to be really persistent and keep asking and keep seeking out people who really know how to recognize these early signs.
And it makes sense. You could have a child's temperament be one that the child is sensitive and they're irritable, and it's not autism. So I also understand that there is
sure.
a sort of wait and see that sometimes has to happen. Don't you think, Dr. Pichotto?
Autism seems to be very heterogeneous, and you know, they say if you've seen one child with autism, you've seen one child with autism, and the caller Amy pointed out, you don't have to see regression. There are children who just don't develop certain ways, and they don't actually lose skills. They just aren't quite on the trajectory.
Yeah, and so before we stop talking with you, Amy, we're going to go to a break in a minute. Is there a final word for that you want to say to other parents?
I would just say that to be patient and to be persistent, and that it's not, I think that when there's a concern about your child, you really want to get on that and get the answers, and there aren't answers with autism. There aren't any clear answers. It is a lot of looking for the right person, looking for what's going to work for your particular child, and you do have to be patient and look for those things and realize it's a marathon, not a sprint.
And I just want to say, you know, there's this wonderful PBS series that you can find online now, pbs.org, I think it is, on autism. It's a three-part series, actually. Dr. Pichotto was in one part of it. But I think what was beautiful about this series is that they really show how different autism looks in different children. And I also want to say they did a very moving piece about the siblings of kids with autism and how they feel, both responsible and sad and sometimes ignored. And I just think, you know, realizing you have another child, too, that that's another piece that all parents have to be paying attention to. I have a book called Making Sense of Autistic Spectrum Disorder by James Copeland. I'll send that to you, Amy. Really appreciate your calling this morning.
Thank you very much.
Have a good day.
You too.
Talking about autism, we'll be back in just about a minute here, and we'll take your call.
Listening to Childhood Matters.
Information for your kids.
For your family.
For you.
Give us a call now at 1-877-372-KIDS.
The conversation continues after this.
Give a hardworking preschool teacher the recognition they deserve by nominating them in the Preschool Teachers Make a Difference Awards, sponsored by Habitat Children's Museum in Berkeley. Nominations are open April 16 through May 31, and 10 teachers will be selected. Each winner will receive a $100 gift certificate from School Specialty Childcraft, lovable puppets donated by Folk Manis, as well as a free family membership and a free field trip to Habitat Children's Museum. For more information and nomination forms, visit habitat.org.
This is Nurse Rona with news for parents, providers, and everyone who cares about kids. Childhood Matters is now podcasting. So many people have told me they love our show but can't listen on Sunday mornings. Now it's easy to get our shows on your iPod or MP3 player and take us with you. Sign up for podcasting today at childhoodmatters.org. And if you or someone you know speaks Spanish, click on the Nuestros Niños logo and learn about our sister show in Spanish with Doctora Marisol.
Tobacco smoke is full of toxic chemicals that are harmful to young children's growing bodies. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases kids' risk for developing asthma, ear infections, and other health problems. Protect your child by creating smoke-free environments. Do not smoke near your child or allow others to smoke inside your home. And in the car, follow the law. In California, it is illegal to smoke in a car with a child passenger. Most important, be a role model. Kids are more likely to become smokers if their parents smoke. The best thing you can do to protect your family's health and your health is to quit smoking. For free help to quit smoking, call the California Smokers Helpline at 1-800-NO-BUTS. That's 1-800-662-8887. Or visit tobaccofreeca.com. And for more information about early childhood development, contact your local Bay Area First 5 County Commission by visiting first5kids.org/bay. And first5california.com/parents. Brought to you by your local First 5.
This is Nurse Rona letting you know that you can connect with Childhood Matters anytime on Facebook, Twitter, and iTunes. Now you can get the latest tips, resources, book recommendations, and share your thoughts with other parents and become part of our virtual community. As always, you can sign up for our podcasts and download past shows, community reports, and interviews. Visit childhoodmatters.org to learn more. That's childhoodmatters.org. And tell your friends.
Do you know someone who is pregnant? When a mom-to-be is 28 weeks or 7 months pregnant, she should make sure she feels her baby move every day. It's called kick counts. Research shows that kick counts are an excellent sign of the baby's well-being. If mom doesn't feel her baby kick at least 10 times in 1 hour, call your healthcare provider right away. By talking about kick counts, you could save a baby's life. This message is brought to you by Alameda County Public Health Department, Children's Hospital Oakland, and First 5 Alameda County.
Continue with Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First 5.
Join in the conversation at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Here's more with Nurse Rona on Childhood Matters.
We're talking with Dr. Deborah Monroe, a clinical psychologist currently working at the Regional Center of the East Bay and in private practice, and Dr. Irva Hertz-Pichotto. She's a professor of public health sciences in the School of Medicine and deputy director of the Children's Center for Environmental Health at UC Davis. And I just want to really put in a plug for the Mind Institute here and UC Davis. They're doing really fabulous work. Dr. Pichotto, why don't you tell us just very briefly about the studies that are going on and that fact that you're looking for parents.
Right. Well, there are a lot of studies going on at the Mind Institute. Two of them that I'm working on. One of them is called the CHARGE study, and CHARGE stands for Childhood Autism Risk from Genetics and Environment. We're looking for parents of a child who is between the ages of 24 and 60 months, that's 2 to 5 years of age, who has a diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder or any other developmental delay. And they would be asked to come to the Mind Institute for a day or so, less than a day, I mean, one or two times. And that's a study that's really focusing on trying to find causes of autism. And we have over 1,000 families enrolled, but we need a lot more. And the other study is for moms who are thinking of having another child or are already pregnant and already have one sibling or a child who has an autism spectrum disorder. What we want to do is follow them through the pregnancy and through the first few years of the child's life. Those moms are at higher risk for having a child with autism, and this will allow us to really look and see what is it in the home environment, in the child's environment, and during the pregnancy that could be contributing to autism.
Good. And for those studies, how would people find out more? Because I know they can go to the main website at ucdmc.ucdavis.edu. So
right. Well, the CHARGE study, it's our website is beincharge.ucdavis.edu. So be in charge, all one word, .ucdavis.edu. And the other one is called MARBLES, which stands for Markers of Autism Risk in Babies Learning Early Signs. And so it's just spelled like
MARBLES.
Like MARBLES. And MARBLES.ucdavis.edu. So that you can find both those studies there, and there's contact information for getting in
touch
with us.
Thank you so much. This is really important. We've got to keep the research going. Let's take another call now. We have Phil from Vallejo with us. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning. How are you today?
Thanks for holding on. You have a question for us?
Yeah. What it is my nephew, he lives with his grandmother, and he was diagnosed with speech and language impairment by the school, so he was put in special ed. And the thing is that we tried to get my mom to understand that he may have autism, but we don't know much on autism. And then I was listening to your show, and it was amazing on some of the things that they were talking about, like, for example, for the gluten diet. Like, for example, for him, you know, he's lactose intolerant, and if he drinks milk, he throws up. Also, for his, for he understands and he comprehends, but as far as his emotions go, he's very emotionless when it comes to interacting with other people.
So you said the word emotionalist, so that that he doesn't have those normal emotions that you would expect. And often the idea of social cues also, that this might be someone who has poor social cues. Let me just ask Deborah here, Monroe, and how old is he, Phil?
He's 10 years old right now.
He's 10 years old. And at what age did he get help for speech and language?
Actually, he was just diagnosed at school, so he's been in special ed since he was in kindergarten.
So what would you advise, Phil, here?
Well, you can call your local regional center, actually, and have your nephew evaluated, and that would be my recommendation. You can go online and go to www.dds, which stands for Department of Developmental Services, .ca.gov. And from that website, you'll be able to locate your local regional center. And I would give the main line a call, and they'd be able to put you through with somebody who can get you set up for an evaluation.
Because some kids are on the spectrum, where school, that's why we call it a spectrum, where their symptoms can be missed, and yet they call, or also called something else,
yes,
right? Like
definitely.
A speech delay. But when you start to put those pieces together around the social cues, what else would Phil be looking for, do you think?
Well, I'm not sure if how much language your nephew has.
He's starting to talk better now. He most of the times when he was younger, he would just be glued to the television set, and whatever was around him, he would not hear. Mm-hmm. So they actually had him do a hearing test.
Right. Uh-huh.
And they found out his hearing was excellent.
Okay.
Right now, you know, the reason why I wanted to see if I get some assistance with him is because my poor mom, she spends 4 hours a day after he gets out of school just on his homework, and then another hour in the morning before he goes to school. Mm-hmm. His arithmetic and anything which, as far as numbers goes, is outstanding. It's amazing. Yeah.
And that's what's amazing, too, is that when we think also of kids with Asperger's, mm-hmm. Sometimes there's... And autism, too. They're so smart at yes. so many things.
Yes, they have specific skills often we see, and letters and numbers are often one of them, and are particularly good at doing math and using numbers, doing statistics, for instance. So that is that sounds like something that might be going on with your nephew.
Well, I'd be glad to talk to you offline, Phil. If you have other questions, you can contact me at rona@childhoodmatters.org. And I'll send you a book. I don't know if your nephew has Asperger's, so I'm not saying that he does. But there's a book called Asperger's Answer Book. But it's questions that parents ask. It might be of help to you. But you need to get someone professional who really understands this syndrome, this spectrum disorder, and have them do an evaluation. You're a good uncle, so I'm so glad you were listening this morning. You take good care now, Phil.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it, because the thing is that we actually went down to the school, and my mom was in tears because
yes.
she didn't know what to do. And they said, well, his testing, he won't get tested for another 2 years.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I'll talk to you. We've got to be advocates here for sure, Phil. And I know you could do it because you care a lot. So let's talk offline. Thank you so much. You know, Gracie, we have a minute left here from San Jose. Would you like to add something for a minute here?
Yes, I would. Hi, I love your show. I work in the education program with the special ed department for 15 years, and we do see a lot of the autism, but same thing about the Asperger's. And, you know, sad to say that there's a lot of kids out there that families really need to consideration on how it's just patience with these kids, because they're sweet little kids and they just need so much patience. I have staff members that are both teachers that have a child that has autism, and it is such amazing how much time they put in with their son. And like I said, you need to know the facts about how to work with them, and just
yes.
constantly. And a lot of times they don't like touching. That's the main thing, that they don't like to be touched.
And some children don't, and then you have to realize it's not about, they don't, you know, your love still needs to be there. Your connection needs to be there. And I just want to say kudos and blessings to those teachers out there, especially the special ed teachers who are just amazing. So thank you, Gracie. I'm going to send you a book that might help you in your work. It's called A Parent's Guide to Developmental Delays by Lori Lacomer. It's a great book, and I hope we'll talk to you again soon. So Deborah Monroe, thank you so much. How can people, again, find you at the Regional Center? You're in the East Bay.
Right. Regional Center of the East Bay. And you can go online to rceb.org, and you can find a whole list of our intake line numbers and so forth. And that's how you can find me also.
Good. Well, thank you for the work you're doing. You're right there trying to get that early intervention, and it's key. A final word for us, Dr. Irva Hertz-Pichotto.
Well, stand by, because in the next year or so, I think there's going to be a lot of new developments and new papers coming out from the scientific world, giving us more clues about what really is behind this growth in autism, what the causes may be, and that will help us define ways that we can prevent future cases. I really believe that we can start to bring that curve, start it, making it flatten and come down in terms of the rates of autism. And it's just a lot more money, unfortunately, is not going into looking at environmental causes. You'd be surprised. It's about 20 or 30 to 1 comparing the research money on genetics as opposed to environment. And I have nothing against looking at genetics. genetics, but it's usually gene-environment interactions that are behind complex disorders, and just not enough money is going to that. So lobby your legislators about that.
That's right. It's one of those things we need, and all of our little kids are growing up, and we'll need care for them as they grow up as well. Thank you so much to our guests and all of our listeners. I'm grateful to our team, Felsha Zuschlag and Lorenzo Plazola at the controls, great producers, and my gratitude to my children, Pei, Mara, Matt, and Karina, and my grandsons, Maceo and David. This is Rona saying goodbye until next week, and remember, spend time with your child and take good care of yourself. Childhood matters, and so do you.
You've been listening to Childhood Matters.
Produced by Collins Media Services and presented by the nonprofit Interactive Parenting Media. Join us again for Childhood Matters. Find out more at childhoodmatters.org.